Hello there, this is Milena, your host of Retail Mavericks podcast. In this episode, we have taken a popular webinar and converted it into a podcast for your listening pleasure. You can visit hivory.com/resources to watch the full webinar. But for now, let's get on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CMA CMO Weekly Webinar Series. My name is Jackie Lewis. I'm the VP of Content here at the CMA, and I'm going to be your host for today's webinar. So we as category managers all know that store-specific planograms can drive the most value. It is the most effective way to get locally relevant assortment and space planograms that drive superior shelf performance. But certainly while this sounds great in theory, in practice it can be expensive, time-consuming, and complicated to achieve. But maybe not so much if you can start leveraging AI and machine learning. So our presenters today are from Hivory. We have Dirk Curtis, VP of Retail, and Jackie Whiteman, Sales Director of Hivory, to explore how AI is being used to rapidly determine what is the most efficient cluster count while considering category goals, merchandising rules and constraints, and impact of demand transference. Dirk is an experienced professional services executive helping retail and CPG companies connect the dots between data and analytics to drive smarter execution. And Jackie's background is in primary market research, and she spent time at InfoScout and Numerator, and has the pleasure of helping businesses bring key insights to their organizations that inform strategy and grow their bottom line. So with that out of the way, welcome guys again. Thank you so much for being here, and I will hand it over to you.
Perfect. Thanks, Jackie. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us, really in what we hope is a conversation, right? A conversation about how AI both enables your data, i.e. your customers, your shoppers, to have a bigger voice in the process, but also empower your people. And so really what we'll focus on today is how does that one-two punch help you deliver more of a locally relevant shelf experience through clusters and through assortment optimization. From an agenda standpoint, we'll hit a few high-level slides, talk about why. So why does this matter and why now? And then we'll go into some key themes as we think about AI and how it's going to transform both how we work, how we think about the problem, the capabilities that we have to solve for it, and ultimately the outcomes that we're able to deliver. And then really, we want to hear from you. So we'll leave as much time as we can at the end for questions, really to get your thoughts and feedback and address those before we wrap up. So if we get started and we think about this idea of, you know, hyper-local retail, kind of how do we think about it? What does it mean? I think intuitively, all of us on this call, if I sat you down in front of a shelf and I gave you some data sets to look at how are items selling at that store, how are they moving, you'd quickly be able to start to identify some opportunities, right? Whatever your objectives are, right? To make the shelf more efficient, to increase revenue, whatever you were trying to do. But I think also you would quickly recognize, well, it's not that simple, right? I have to deal with the scale of doing this across many stores, many categories, and I also have to account for just all the complexities of, well, how does that product get from where it originated to that store and make sure it's available for that customer as they come in. So we know the opportunity and we also know the challenges. And so I would contend that it's probably more important than ever that we start to go leverage new tools to address this opportunity. Why is that? Well, customers' expectations, shoppers' expectations have never been higher than they ever were before. Their behaviors are constantly changing. For example, they're bombarded with digital advertisements, personalization, recommendations, and they want that same experience when they're in the store. I want to know when I come in and I cross that shelf, you're going to have the items I need, you're going to have the items I want, and they're going to be available to me and easy for me to find. And a few more reasons why I think just the shelf continues to play a critical role in that overall customer journey. We looked at a study that was done a couple of years ago, and it said if we went hyperlocal across all stores, that opportunity is massive. It's over $140 billion in the North American market alone. And a couple of fun stats we had caught up on in the previous CMA webinar around retail shopping, actually 82% of all sales in retail went through the store. And what I really found fun was in 2021, for the first time in, gosh, many years since we probably started tracking this, offline sales growth outpaced online sales. Now, does that mean digital sales as a trend is going to tank or not go away? Actually, we think it means the exact opposite. Omni is clearly here to stay, but it's now putting increased pressure on the shelf. I no longer have to account for meeting the demand of the consumers that are coming into the store and navigating the store. I've also now got to account for the digital demand, make sure I have the right holding power for both people that are in the store also those that are shopping around the store but using digital means to navigate. And so I've also got to account for all that while dealing with the labor shortages and all the cost challenges and supply chain. And so this is why we think it's a big opportunity to leverage new tools and start to go and attack this challenge. Tools that allow us to do three things. Scale, so scale to analyze large amounts of data and all the various decisions that I have to make in order to get more relevant and effectively merchandised. Speed. Speed is a massive advantage in retail and CPG. How do I move faster in my analytics, so in how I make decisions, but also how do I go faster in turning those into execution? And then lastly, I think one of the really fun ones this opened up is precision, right? I've got limited capital, limited resources. Where are those really targeted opportunities that I can go identify and then turn into return on investment for my business? So we know the opportunity. We might look at this slide as a bit of a challenge. I think it also means it's an opportunity, right? So as an industry, we've lagged adopting AI. There's probably lots of reasons we could sit and talk for hours about why that is in our industry. But more importantly, as an industry, retail, CPG has some of the most potential to realize value through investing in and using AI. So I think, you know, if you do anything today, and we'll close on this as well, I think the first step is just putting yourself out there, learning about these tools and technologies and figuring out, hey, which tools and how can I use them to support my business to gain a competitive advantage? And that's what we hope to highlight today as we think about how do you use that to get more close to your customers as a clustering approach, as well as the assortment that delivers that impact. And so as we dig in on AI and delivering smarter clusters, there's four key areas that we're going to go a little deeper on today. The first is bottoms-up approach. This idea of starting with the data that represents my customers as they purchase at the shelf so that I can uncover hidden insights about my customers and really start to unlock those growth opportunities. The second, I shouldn't choose a favorite, but maybe is my favorite, is really just this idea of rapid iteration. AI puts a tool in your hand to really know before you go. All these questions maybe I couldn't answer before, I can now rapidly simulate and understand how's that going to impact my business. Third is then execution, right? One of the happy accidents, as I've heard Jackie say around AI, is that you no longer have to think about analytics and execution as two separate things. AI allows you to look at them together and really accelerate how you operationalize those insights. And then lastly, retail by definition is a collaborative business, right? Working across internal and external partners to make decisions about what I put on the shelf, how I price it, et cetera. And too often it's a black box. We have to debate and spend a lot of time before we take action. And so AI gives us a whole new way to bring transparency and data to that collaboration process. So at this point, Jackie, why don't you take us through bottoms up and what that means as it relates to clustering?
I like tackling the bottoms up because it's kind of a heady concept, Dirk. This is the one that throws everything on its head, right? So when we talk about clustering, the typical exercise in clustering uses averages of averages data, right? Broad demographics, brand preferences, velocities, and then we push down what the retail execution should look like. The problem with this process is it ignores latent shopper segments that might exist in certain areas or certain stores, doesn't always account properly for demand transfer among items. And, you know, we're humans. If we're using humans to do the analysis in a top-down approach, we have all our own biases. And guess what? They end up in the output. So we do introduce our bias. But here's the thing. Because shoppers have already voted with their wallets in store about what best serves them, a bottoms-up approach to clustering analytics, at least we believe, is fundamentally better because it's cleaner and more granular and therefore identifies more growth opportunities across a set of stores.
Yeah, I think, Jackie, one of the other things with the traditional top-down that's been tough is there's a lot of time, research, and effort to develop those smart insights, but it's hard to then be agile and react to changes in the marketplace. Can you talk about how bottoms up helps us kind of solve for that, or, you know, just the flexibility that gives?
Agile versus waterfall methods of development, right? In the tech industry, we talk about agile all the time. Agile, releasing minimally viable products, iterating until we get the right thing, as opposed to the old way things are done when you scope a huge project and you plan it out and, you know, it's called the waterfall method, totally inflexible, totally inflexible. So when you're doing top down, you're really using a waterfall method to develop your clusters, where when you're taking bottoms up and you're using AI to do the analytics, you can iterate all you want. Yep. Excellent.
Absolutely. That's great.
So first of all, Dirk, I want everybody on the phone to know this is not about creating new data or more data. It's about overlaying a capability, massive computing power, to help you get more out of the data you already have and trust, right? So Hybris AI allows for retailers to take that bottoms-up approach. We ingest store-level sales and space data, and the AI analyzes every single item at every single store, every single possible item at every single possible store. And it identifies the mathematical patterns between all those things, billions and billions of calculations. And by doing that, it can then predict how every possible item will perform in every possible store. It considers the available space and merchandising rules because it's already ingested that. And then it can prescribe the best shelf set for each location. So basically, it's treating each store like the unique fingerprint that it is. But for lots of the folks on the phone, the idea of executing store-level planograms is a total non-starter. So our AI uses sophisticated techniques like nonlinear regression and k-means analysis. Dirk, I had one of our data science folks explain this to me as 3D math. So what those techniques do is really simply identify all the store fingerprints that are similar, groups those into kind of families, or rather clusters. And then you can analyze the clusters any way you want. You know, you can analyze by segment, by pack type, by preferences for private label versus branded items, et cetera. But here's the thing, you're not taking the high level data and pushing it down and creating clusters out of that. Instead, you're letting the math do the work. And when you drill into the results, interesting patterns emerge. And so when you use computers and AI to do the analysis, you can actually take a bottoms-up approach. And by doing so, the outcome is pretty significant. So far for our clients, we are able to help them grow their categories 6%. And that's, we're talking like full case revenue. Plus through automation and the speed at which this runs, it allows our clients to reduce their tedious Excel time, like their hours and hours in JDA. It increases efficiencies through automation and allows them to be, you know, smarter, actually use their brains instead of just the tedious tactical stuff, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, great transition, right? I mean, the idea of art and science is really what I think makes, you know, this idea of rapid iteration just so powerful, because AI, as sophisticated as it is and the computation that it can do, it's not a panacea. It doesn't solve for everything. It can't possibly account for every potential scenario or strategy that you want to execute. But because that math is hard, we leave so many questions unanswered, or we don't quite iterate through that process. And this is really where we get into this idea of rapid iteration, that we can simulate and quantify that. Jackie referenced, you hear a lot about this in the tech industry from a product development standpoint, right? I know where I'm starting, and I know ultimately where I want to go, but I can't understand all the potential variables on that journey so that I can just step change into that product. So they leverage this idea of an agile iterative process to test and learn. How do I add different constraints, add different ideas, and ultimately move from stage one to stage two, stage three, to my final approach? And so how do I apply this, right, to thinking about clusters? Well, as you said, right, it's a combination of art, it's a combination of science. And there are generally three reasons we found with our clients as to why they cluster. And being able to actually iterate and figure out what is right for them, and doing that in minutes or days as opposed to weeks or months, really changes the way that we think about it. They either cluster because, look, I just operational resources. I can't draw that many planograms, so I'm going to use clusters to limit the amount of planograms that I have to draw. Or, okay, yeah, I'm ready to take that step to get closer to my customers. I want to better assort, meet their needs, regional demand, seasonal demand. So I'm going to use clusters to get me closer to that step. Or third, look, I've got different performing stores, high velocity stores, low velocity stores. These put different pressures on my days of supply and my holding power. So I'm going to use clusters to try and get myself closer to maximizing that shelf performance of each store. What's great about AI and this ability to iterate is I no longer have to make assumptions on those things. I can simulate all the different scenarios so that we can make that decision collectively as a team or with our partners, what's best for our business, right? And so let's go through a few examples, right? First thing I do, I load that data that Jackie referenced, the store space information. Now, I'm not necessarily looking to go store specific, but I've never known what that opportunity looks like. And so I load that in, I add some global merchandising rules, and within a few minutes, right, I said, hey, go optimize every single store in my universe and let me know what that opportunity is. And well, I see, okay, great. It's 9% annual revenue growth, roughly about $23 million. I also see a pretty significant gain, right, in my days of supply because I'm refining that mix for each store. But equally, what's really fun is, look, this is going all the way down to the store item level. So I quickly identify not all stores are created equal, right? My top 40 stores, or not my top 40, but 40 of my stores have a 30% or greater opportunity. And this gives me really precise insights and I can start to make different decisions. Maybe I want to specifically store those 40 stores, but everything else I'm then going to cluster, right? And now I have the ability to put data to those decisions. And I've done this, you know, really in just a matter of 20 to 30 minutes to kind of get at this insight. But as we said, look, I'm not ready yet to go to store specific. I've already got a set of clusters. How do I learn about those clusters, what that opportunity is, and then what would AI tell me to do to get even more refined with those clusters? So I'm taking a scenario, we've sat down, we've built, let's say the customer has their own definitions, they're geographically, demographically, attitudinal, behaviorally driven. The result is they have 7 clusters. This means I'm drawing 515 planograms. My deviation on days of supply is okay, it's not great. I'm up and below that in a lot of cases, and I do about $250 million in revenue. By having AI be able to iterate, I can take that input, quickly optimize that and say, well, okay, what's my opportunity absent innovation and promotions to optimize my existing clusters? I can see it's 2.2% revenue growth. I improve my days of supply by about 0.4 points, and I can seamlessly convert on this because, as we'll talk about a bit later, it translates it into the final planograms. But I want to know, what is AI going to tell me? What is it going to tell me about my shoppers, and how is it going to suggest I find that break-even point or that balance between planograms, revenue growth, and the number of planograms that I have to draw? The really great thing about the bottoms-up approach is we're accounting for that, right? I don't have to think about all those different considerations and input them in to build my clusters. The AI is looking at that customer demand, and then any attribute I can overlay against store product level, I can now analyze and see what that's driving. And so how are those families, as Jackie referenced in those fingerprints, presenting themselves? Is it brand preferences that are driving my clusters? Is it demographics? Is it competitive intelligence, price sensitivity? Again, there's immense flexibility for me to react. And I also am using the space data, so I know this is executable and aligned towards my category goals. And so where's that break-even point?
And I know I've had so much fun with that exercise with some of my clients who've gone through clustering because, again, you're letting the data have a better idea, but you can drill in and see what it's saying. So we've seen like stores over index for interesting segments. We've seen interesting, you know, store relationships and pairings that you wouldn't expect. And then when you actually think about it, oh, cool, that makes sense. So it's just a pretty fun exercise.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, we see it more and more as just use it for insights. Maybe I'm not going to execute those clusters, but what is it that's driving my stores and my customers? Because each store is a unique profile, right? And how does that kind of shop and bring together? But when I come back to your point, right, like, well, I had a goal. I wanted to optimize revenue growth, but minimize my operational efficiencies. Within minutes, I can tell the AI, hey, look, I know what the opportunity is if I optimize existing. I know what the full opportunity is if I draw 715 planograms, but I'm not ready to do that. Just go drive a bunch of different scenarios, 5, 10, 15, all the way up to 30 different clusters. What's that impact? And in this situation, I've been able to quickly identify, collaborate across my peers. Look, I can actually draw 60 less planograms than I have before, generate 4.5% growth on my business, and improve my days of supply. And I've been able to figure this out right within a day, as opposed to spending weeks or months trying to go through that analytics. And I'm really just leveraging the data I know to drive this outcome. We all know it doesn't stop there. And what's really, I think, fun about AI and what gets me the most excited is it's about combining what you bring to the table as an associate in that business and letting the math do the math. once I've got my clusters, it's a long process, right, to go through that assortment process and get to final outcome. And so I've got this AI or data science essentially in my pocket, and I can ask it any unlimited strategy simulation. I can run as many as I want, and I can see that both at a national, regional, or even store and SKU level approach. This is just some example screenshots out of the platform of Curate, where I've ran different scenarios to see, well, if I remove points of distribution for this product line because we're having supply chain issues, where's that volume going to go, and how's that going to change my shelf set? I'm testing out my new innovation, and what stores do they belong in, and where can I place them? I've got inflation happening. I got to raise price. I know from elasticity where that's going to trade and move. What's that going to do to my shelf and my holding power? And so I have this asset where I don't have to let questions go unanswered. I can actually simulate them and then predict them and see how they're going to impact my end assortment. So it really becomes a very interactive experience for that user to lean on my knowledge of the business.
And, you know, your reduced points of distribution example is so relevant. I'm thinking of one of my clients that's deep in the reset process, yeah, right? You know, they've already iterated it, identify how many clusters they're going to go with, and then they've added, you know, their assortment rules, their merchandising rules. But whoops, at the end of the day, this other manufacturer can't supply that much. Now we have to go back. Thank goodness they're using that AI-based agile method, because they can react to those fun, exciting experiments. So path to execution, hallelujah. I like to talk about this in the context of Google Maps. So for those of you who have visited with Hivory one-on-one, you probably heard us use this analogy, but look, Google Maps is an AI technology that we all carry around in our pockets. Thank God, right, Dirk?
Yeah, I'm dating myself, but I remember printing out MapQuest files. So yeah.
Yes, yes. Or calling someone who knows the area for directions. Oh my gosh. So here's the thing about Google Maps. It's aware of the possible ways to get somewhere. It's aware of real world obstacles like construction, like accidents, and in this case, tolls. So if I'm in Paris and I want to get to Amsterdam, that'd be a fun trip. Maybe I should do that. All I have to do is really punch in my destination. It'll give me the options with the best one recommended. And it predicts the outcome of that route. So when will I actually arrive? Then when I select the route, it gives me turn by turn directions the whole way there. I know I take it for granted, but hallelujah, right?
Absolutely.
Really, Hivory's AI is basically like a Google Maps for retail shelves. So we give it a goal. Are we trying to grow revenue, or are we trying to grow volume, or some combination of the two? And then we add stops, or in our case, add assortment and merchandising rules and scenarios, such as what if I delete this item? Or what if I anticipate lower volume on this line because I'm taking price? And what if I set days of supply to, you know, this many days? Then it will optimize to achieve my goal within the rules I gave it. And it's doing this while being mindful of the space available and other real world physical rules like distribution rules or availability. So just like Google Maps tells you what time you'll arrive, Hivory's AI predicts the impact on dollars and volume of whatever the scenario it is that you're running. And then it gives you turn by turn directions. It actually prescribes the add, keep, delete files and automated planograms, and it tells us what the clusters should be and what those mods should look like. For instance, in this scenario, we're actually on the left here seeing a screenshot from Hivory's Curate solution. And this is an example of the amount of rules we can add. So we are, you know, front-facing some items, side-facing some items. We can tell it assortment rules, like you have to have chocolate before you can add strawberry. And we don't want to change all the items on the shelf at once. We want to limit churn so we don't give our retailer a heart attack. And the output is actually an automated planogram and the add, keep, delete files that get you there. So there's your turn by turn directions exportable.
You mentioned something there, like don't give the retailer a heart attack or the retailer, right? I've got to, you know, collaborate across both internal and external functions. And one of the things that, you know, I think is really interesting about AI, it's also a bit of a cultural change and, right, a philosophy change of how I work. And how does it actually allow for that transparent, that data-driven collaboration? And so we believe there's three things that have to be true for you to truly get the full benefit of AI within your organization, to take those decisions quickly and with confidence, as well as to collaborate across organizations, many people with different objectives, different goals. So the first one is, I have to have trusted data. So I have to kind of natively understand, like, where's that data coming from? And do I understand how it's getting me to that recommendation? If you take the maps example, right? I don't sit back and debate how is that AI working in Google Maps, because I genuinely trust the data. I know it's getting it from, you know, mapping systems. It's got the GPS device in my phone. It's tracking car drive times. And so I start from a place of trusting that information, but that isn't enough, right? I've got to also be able to quantify that impact. Again, taking to the maps example, if Google Maps was telling me it's going to take me 5 hours to get somewhere that I generally understand it should probably take me somewhere between an hour and a half, I'm going to lose confidence in that. So as humans, we want to be able to interact with it. We want to be able to see what that quantification is so that it builds trust both for myself and across organizations to make decisions. Once I've got trust in the data, I can quantify the impact. Really, that last key variable is, can I decompose those variables between where I am and where I'm going and the impact that they have? Again, building on the maps example, if there's an accident and it reroutes me, I can see exactly how it's rerouting me, and I can see how much time it's going to add to my end journey. Maybe I'm picking someone up and I want to share with them, hey, I'm going to stop and get you. Here's the route I'm going to take. I add that to my trip. We can both see when I'm going to be there as well as when now we're going to get to our final destination. And so we think it's critical that these three things are all true in order to really get away from that black box and really unveil that curtain so that we can make those decisions better together. So and how do we think about this? Yeah, go ahead.
I would argue, potentially, my hypothesis is that the reason in your earlier slide where we saw that retail is kind of laggard adopting of AI,
yeah,
I guess a lot of it is because most technologies that they've tried to use have been sort of a black box, right? So
100%. Cool. Yeah, and so, you know, how do you get there, right? Well, how do you think about that from a clustering and assortment standpoint? Well, again, trusted data, that's step one, right? So we're using your information, right? Very standard point of sale, space information. And you understand kind of how the data works. And maybe you don't understand exactly how the computation is happening at scale, but I'm like, I know I can get myself to, here's how I would make assortment decisions and ultimately what I would expect the impact to be. The next is quantified impact. This is one of the really exciting things that AI opens up faster than anything we've ever seen before, which is I can see on the left-hand side, I've got an image of Curate, the dynamic data table. I can see exactly how this is impacting my sales, right? So I can, does that make sense to me? Is there biases that I had that I now want to check and I want to dig in deeper? And I can see this both at a national level all the way down to SKU store item level. So I can really get a handle on, hey, how is this playing out and does it make sense to me and can I act with confidence? Not only can I see performance on the right-hand side, I can see, yeah, that's actually translating to a shelf. How does that shelf work? Does it make sense? Do I have, you know, questions about that? So I've got a very clearly visualized quantified impact. When we talk about decomposing variables, when I'm adding rules, constraints, and situations like, hey, I want to make sure I control the points of distribution presence for this brand. I'm going to change my merchandising heights and fixture types in the category this year. I've set churn limits. Maybe I'm dealing with a food category with expiration dates. How do I make sure the days of supply is optimized for those expiration dates? All of these variables that I'm going to set or I'm going to ask my partners to set, I can see exactly how they're impacting the category and the stores, all the way down to the, how many SKUs are impacted by that rule or constraint, and how many stores are impacted by that, and then what's the impact? So if I click on an item on the right, I could actually see, well, why is that item there? And what rules have I put in that are impacting its placement to that? So it allows you as an organization internally, but also externally with different partners, like your suppliers, your retail partners, to have data that you trust, to be able to quantify those decisions and then be able to decompose how those decisions are impacting performance. It means less time debating a black box, less time debating like, well, is this the right thing to do? And more time focused on, hey, is this actually going to help move the needle for us to achieve our objectives, drive revenue growth, and get to that vision of a more locally relevant and effectively merchandised shelf?
I had actually a client just recently. So they're dedicated, you know, named captains of a specific category at a specific retailer. And they knew that private label was way overspaced. It's not that good. but it was very difficult for them to communicate that to the retailer without looking like they're being totally self-serving. So through using Hivery and being really transparent about what rules are being applied to what items, why, it was like the AI could tell the retailer they're overspaced. So we ultimately wrote rules to protect the private label items, but at least the retailer knew the truth, right?
Well, but I love that example for a couple of reasons, right? It's, look, we're not all coming to the table with the same objectives, even within the same organization, and that's okay, right? What I want to do is have the data have a voice in that process and be clear, what's the impact of those decisions? And even to your point, I may still make the decision to protect this thing because it's in the interest of my strategy. AI is about putting a really powerful tool in your hands to do what you do best, differentiate yourself from the competition, grow sales, grow market share. So love the example.
Yeah, exactly. So just to recap for everyone on the line, how artificial intelligence is different from traditional approaches to clustering. First of all, it literally flips the approach upside down. You can apply an agile process to clustering creation. Hallelujah. It hands you the turn-by-turn directions, and it allows you to be open and honest with your retailer and better guide them for the best decisions.
Going back to the beginning and kind of the challenge, you know, AI has got a tremendous opportunity to transform your internal teams and your outcomes. We'll hit on some of the key themes and how those translate to benefits. But I think what I would ask is, you know, now's a great time. Lean in, learn about these new technologies, invest in kind of figuring out, testing them and learning together, because truthfully, it can deliver some really powerful outcomes to getting to that place of, hey, how do I get to more relevant shelves? So first is that bottoms up approach. It uncovers hidden insights. It unlocks those new growth opportunities that I simply can't get to on my own, right? And I get to do it at scale. It empowers your teams, right? Your teams are the magicians in the background who really understand the business strategy, the objectives. It's not about being great at a tool. It's about enabling them to do what they do best. It's about improving the operational performance of the shelf. We're dealing with a pretty interesting time with massive constraints on supply chain and got to make the shelf work as hard as possible. So how do I optimize for both demand as well as space and holding power? And then lastly, to Jackie's point, right? It's just about having effective and transparent collaboration. When I combine these together, right, I now can start on that journey of really delivering a better experience for my customers at the shelf. And you know what? I'm going to call an audible. I'm going to throw one more out there. For those that have had a chance to kind of really use tools like this, it's also fun. Like it's fun to be able to test different ideas, test your biases, test ideas, and see what that means and really iterate and address challenges that you simply just couldn't do before. So we'd love to collaborate and kind of go on that journey together. And with this, we'd love to hear kind of what you think. What questions do you have, thoughts, and spend a little time going through that.
So how far can you take clustering and how much is too complex? So where is the break-even point and can you explain how AI can help achieve that?
Yeah, Jackie, I'll take first stab. Feel free to kind of layer into that. You know, I think this is what makes kind of that iteration piece so important, right? Because the answer to that is probably unique to your organization. It's probably dependent upon level of maturity of where you're at, right? Because if, you know, I could analyze what store specific looks like. I could analyze 50 clusters and I'm operationalizing that. I'm in the stores, but how do I check in those stores? How do I go through that? So the real fun with AI is it allows you to kind of play around with what is the right approach and then be able to balance that against resource constraints and operational constraints. So I think that's, you know, I don't think there's a single answer, but I think the answer is, well, how do I get there, right? And how do I get there? What's best for me? Because year one may be this, and then year two and three may be something totally different.
We can take clustering however far people want, but what's really neat is the iteration approach. Okay, let's make it 5 clusters. How many mods does that mean? Let's make it 6. Let's make it 7. Let's make it 8. Like, yeah. From my understanding, my clients haven't been able to do that before. Now they've used nonlinear regression and k-means to do clustering, but they had to go and say, okay, we want 5 clusters. And then it takes like a month, 2 months, maybe an outside consulting firm to run the math and give them the path to achieve that. But they don't know if that's the exact right thing to do, right? So the iterative impact predictions allow you to identify that tipping point of what's right.
Gotcha. And the trial and error, like Dirk said, I mean, you're not going to know, right? Until you try it out and see if it's too many and what is too many. I mean, because it
Well, how
exists
many times
somewhere
do
for
we,
everybody.
how many times do we not make a decision simply because the analysis is too hard, right? So it allows you to put data to that decision for sure.
Okay, the next one. Can you use the clustering tool for e-commerce retailers and or distribution centers? Do you have current clients using it in this way today?
Yeah, so the great thing about the approach, right, is we're looking at two things, demand and space. And e-commerce has the same challenges, right? Demand, which is just looking at the sales digitally driven by, you know, and you can get down to location, store, et cetera, and then space, whether that's a DC or even a dark store, or if I actually fulfill that through the shelf. So we've done some testing with different customers. It's a question that we look at quite a bit. It ultimately comes down to, you know, just having access to those key assets and what's that space constraint. It's really fun or complex, I guess, when you try to fill it through the shelf as well, and it puts that pressure on the shelf, but yeah.
It's not designed at its core right now to be a digital assortment technology. However, what I'm finding is my clients' e-com category leaders are super excited about Hy-Vee because it solves the problem of shelf holding power when we're talking about buy online, pick up in store. But number two, those hyper local insights, the more sophisticated our retailers are when they can say, okay, you know, type in your zip code for your online grocery order or whatever, you know, those are hyper local assortments. So the insights and the information about what should happen at shelf is true for what should happen online in that specific geography. So it does translate for sure.
Yep, makes perfect sense. All right, great. Next one. Can you speak to any validation work on projected results?
Certainly a topic that's easier to go into individually because it protects the innocent, i.e. the clients we've worked with.
Sure.
I guess I'll address it from two ways. One, we work with you. Again, we want to be transparent. Like, we're going to show you exactly how our predictions are working. And we actually have in our own machine learning testing those individual learns, right? So that's step one, because you're not always going to have the, you know, the time to resolve it on the back end. Equally, where we've been in market and done this work, that's where we've done the individual validation with those customers. I'll simply share, it's just, I can't divulge that now because that would violate our appropriate agreement with said customers, but we'd happily be able to go deeper on that.
Yep.
Yeah. Excellent. Our customers have told us that our predictions are right on, which is pretty exciting. And it's been an iterative process here over several years, ensuring that we are using the right methodology to make those predictions. And for folks that are evaluating Hy-Vee under NDA and stuff, we have a whole technical explanation process to go through.
Perfect. Good. Yes, that's great. So if you want more information on that, you know, I'm sure that you can work with them directly on it. That's great. All right. Can AI or your tool help with total floor space planning? So where categories should be in proximity to other categories, how much should certain categories have versus others, and how many check lanes a store needs, traditional versus self-checkout?
Yeah, another question, especially on the retail side, right? That is not a core platform product that we've kind of built out today. It is on the roadmap for us. So we would approach that more as a service-based project because the algorithm, yes. Okay. That, but I wouldn't want to commit to, or I'd be transparent, right? It's not core to the product. It'd be a service project with the client. Yeah.
All right. What is the training time to be functional with your platform?
Ah, okay. Oh. Jackie, I'll throw out first this. I was the one who said it was fun, so I got a line to that, right? personally, like, you know, within a few days of being here, I was able to use the platform. So it is fairly intuitive, right? But
okay.
Jackie, if you want to kind of speak specifically to, I know, you know, we put through customers and kind of go through those training plans, and you probably have tangible feedback from the clients.
We get to kick off, we get the data we need. And, you know, we have a whole onboarding process for that to and data ops folks to help people through that. Technically, we say it takes about 2 weeks to load the data and turn on our platform, Curate. And then we're doing either an on-site, now that we're back in person some places, on-site afternoon, what we call Hy-Vee Academy, or a couple of several hours of training. And then people are ready to go. I will say it takes probably another 4 to 6 weeks to really fine-tune the configuration. So, you know, but we're reviewing at our 90-day, you know, QBRs, we're reviewing solid work, solid insights, and actually things that have been applied already. So it's a pretty quick process compared to other implementations that I've heard about that don't go so quickly. I say about a month.
Great. Perfect. All right. It's pretty easy to get up and running. That's great.
We try.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The next one. So does your analysis, or maybe better put, can the analysis take into account shopping patterns across stores? So is there an understanding of multi-source shopping for different or the same retailer, cherry pickers shopping different assortments, et cetera, et cetera? So can you guys, I guess, handle that as part of the analysis?
Yeah, and I'll attempt to kind of break it into the three topics just to make sure I'm, you know, hopefully answering the question the right way. One, from a product cross category, right? Okay. Like, so we're looking at all possible iterations and predicting how each item would do, even if it's not in a store. We can just expand that scope to cross categories, right? So maybe I have play across categories or shopping. I want to understand that. If it's an item I don't carry, but it's in the market, right? I can load that data in to help me understand exactly what the demand is so that the AI can now consider it, right, for an addition. So that's kind of from a product standpoint. As you think about competitive retailers, two probably addresses most of that. And then Kimberly, because we're building from customer demand, you will see it in the data. The way one store behaves, because it's next to X competition, is very different than store X, Y, and Z. So we think about it very much product consideration set, but it is also, because of the longitude, latitude, location-based data, considering the geography around it and how that's impacting its store performance. Yeah.
Maybe this question is asking about rest of market data, meaning what is this retailer's share in this category? Because I get asked that all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't ingest the rest of market data. That's where our clients, the users of our platform, get to actually action on that insight. We know, let's say, this retailer, our client, is leaking chocolate ice cream. You know, X brand chocolate ice cream to these other stores. Okay, so what is the right assortment for X brand chocolate ice cream where? And let's turn up distribution. Maybe let's turn it up 5%, 10%, 20%. What does that do? And how do we make that happen at shelf? That's the real perfect application for our capabilities.
If you would like to learn more about Hybrid Curate and how it can help grocers quantify the financial outcome of any assortment decisions and rapidly execute the best merchandising strategy at the store level, you can navigate to hybrid.com/curate and book a demo. Thank you for listening until the end of this podcast. Until the next time.